You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Recorded in Chicago, Illinois, with your hosts, Ken, Matt, Neil, and Jeff. This is Triviality.
Hello, and welcome to Triviality, the game where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge. Once again, I'm joined in the studio by Jeff and Neil.
Wonderful to see you, Ken.
As always.
Good morrow.
Good morrow to you, Neil.
Good bone morrow.
And how are things on the estate?
The estate is in flux, and once my letter from my nephew comes in, we'll find out how the final preparations are being made.
So many words for so little content.
Guinevere has cholera.
Yes, right. Yes, Aunt Mildred has cholera, and the horse's handler is boinking the gardener.
Wow. Yeah. It's like a Jane Austen novel up in here. But thankfully, we're going to be rescued by that by a couple great guests today.
Yeah, we have wonderful guests today. Our first time caller, long time listener, Oakland 5 supporter on Patreon. Come to us from the Berkeley, California area, John Ross. How are you, John?
Hey, I'm doing good. Yeah, long time, first time.
Yeah, so nice to have you here and get a chance to meet you a little bit before we started recording. But for the folks at home, tell them a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so like you said, I am out here in Berkeley, California with my wife and two cats. Love bar trivia, hiking, playing guitar, sports, mostly football. Yeah, I've been listening to you guys since Geek Bowl 2019, I think y'all had some advertisements up there. And
Vegas, yes.
Happy to finally be here.
Thank you.
That's awesome. And thank you also for playing football, playing guitar, playing sports, and all those things at the same time and listening to the show is what it sounded like. So thank you for that.
Talented guy.
Very talented. And our special guest host today, someone who's no stranger to the show, he comes from the town where Dan Marino made a name for himself in college in order to become one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
And Isotoner spokesperson,
and someone who kissed Randall Einhorn or Finkel. I can't remember, Finkel or Einhorn, one of them. Either way, we're so excited to have him here.
I'm so confused.
He's at the Patreon level of Please Don't Tell My Wife How Much I Give Triviality, and he's a lifer for Triviality, which we appreciate. David Feuder, how are you, David?
Neil, Ken, Jeff, great to be here again. Yeah, the land of Dan Marino, the land of Neil's favorite burnt almond torts, you know. We're just waiting for you guys to get over here and we can have a live game or something. But, you know, it's been about 6-7 months and it's time to get back on the podcast. Great to see you guys again.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah.
Always happy to have you back.
Speaking of Ace Ventura, Matt is actually on a Miami movie tour of all the locations.
Oh, the locations. Ventura, he's getting a tour from Tyreek Hill or something.
He's under the docks or whatever, wherever Dan Marino is tied up.
Yeah, yeah, under the docks. Yeah. Speaking of the Dolphins, this is a really quick aside for people who love sports. Mike McDaniel's their coach. He's sort of a wunderkind with offensive plays, Ken, but he's a young guy. Mm-hmm. And there's a comedian
like
named...
12?
Well, yeah, he's a wunderkind 12-year-old offensive coordinator and head coach. There's a comedian named Dan Soder. He's from the TV show Billions. Maybe you've seen him before. Anyway, they're best friends, and when they were kids, there was a funny story where he said they'd play Tecmo Super Bowl, and Mike McDaniel, the coach of the Dolphins now, would pick the Cowboys, take Deion Sanders, and go very deep into the safety area, and then intercept all of his friends' passes, and every time he would do it, he'd go, prime time. And he said it haunts him to this day. So
Sounds like me and your brother playing Mortal Kombat.
That's what it reminds me of. Yeah,
I just keep going, smoke, because I just spam them with smoke moves.
Oh, do you? Yeah. That's the way to play it. Yeah. And David's going to be hiring me pretty soon for some PI work, but we'll talk about that off camera.
Yeah.
But David, you wrote today's game. So what do we have in store today for your game?
Oh, you know, just your typical general knowledge. Try to keep it fun. Try to make the questions gettable for you guys. It sounds like we're going to have some good teams today. I expect them and hoping moderately high scores.
Well, speaking of teams, Ken.
Yeah, John, I was looking at your shelf behind you there. You have a couple figurines from, what was it? Elden Ring, Dark Souls, and those sorts of games. So I said, okay, so our team name is going to be Glutton for Punishment.
Yeah.
Since those are notoriously hard games.
Well, Ken started talking about one of the seven sins, and Jeff got on that track. And then, Jeff, we started talking about the movie Seven. So we said, what's in the loot box is going to be our team name.
What's in the loot box?
Yeah, so anytime you join Patreon at the Rules Guy impersonator level or higher, you get a loot box, and maybe one day it could be you.
Yeah, it also has 15 minutes of free
lives.
Not
in the box.
Not in the box, right.
Opening the box.
We're not talking about the CEO of Goop here, but it could be anyone, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, let's get the rules so we can begin today's game.
The rules of the game are simple. 20 questions split into two rounds worth 10 points apiece. At halftime, there'll be a special swing round designed by this week's host. After regulation, players will enter the final round with the points that they've accumulated and will have a chance to wager 0 to 30 points on 5 categorized questions. At the end of the game, someone will be named the cream of the crop.
I am the cream!
All right, we now have the rules. Go ahead and take it away, David.
All right, let's ease into this game with a geography question. So, Greensboro, North Carolina is the most populous U.S. city, which starts with the letter G. The second and third most populous cities, which starts with the letter G, are both found in the same western state. Name it.
All right, Jeff, you wrote down an answer. I wrote down one. I think it's the same one, so we're going to lock it in.
So, John, I can't really think of any G cities. Can you?
I know there's Greeley, Colorado, which is not huge. It's near Fort Collins. I think there's Grants Pass in Oregon, which also not huge.
Yeah.
I don't know how LA kind of subcities break down. I know there's like a Gardena out there. I mean, not a lot of big cities.
I would hedge our bets and say California is, you know, one of the most populous states and, you know, probably has a lot of various cities with high populations. So maybe just say California.
I agree.
It's pretty far west as well. So we'll say California.
And you also have the city of Garden Grove, which I've forgotten about. But Neil and I must have just been thinking about something else earlier because we both focused in on Glendale, Arizona. So we just guessed Arizona.
No, a loot box is on the board. It is Arizona, Glendale and Gilbert, Arizona, site of a few Super Bowls, Glendale. So yeah, it is Arizona.
Gilbert. That's right.
I'm glad you locked in and said Arizona because I was talking about Glendale, California, where a lot of film professionals live. But like, luckily you said Arizona.
No. That's really funny. We are not on the same page today. This should be an interesting one.
I think I saw a thing on Thursday. I think Brock Purdy came from Gilbert, Arizona. They were talking about that before the game and just...
Yeah, it's Glendale and Gilbert, but... All right, round one, question two. I did mention a Super Bowl, so the second question of the round is in music. Very current event music question. Who was announced today as the halftime headliner for Super Bowl 58 in Las Vegas, Nevada?
We can lock in.
Wow. Today.
As what is today,
25th? 24th?
Today is the 24th of September.
I think I saw that this was Usher like an hour ago.
Yeah, we're going to lock in with Usher. That is correct.
Usher, really?
Usher Raymond, wow.
He's also going to show people to their seats before the game.
He's a double threat.
He is a double threat, and he is headlining Super Bowl 58. It is Usher.
He has to bring out Lil Jon, I would
What
hope.
Has he even done in the last 15 years Not to get sure. a Super Bowl? I guess.
Well, I think this is what happened, I think. He has a residency in Vegas, and I bet the NFL was like, well, we don't have to pay him that much to come to the Death Star.
That's
so.
True. I have a feeling that's the same thing that they did with The Who, where it's like, we'll just get them. They won't cost us too much.
Well, Taylor Swift turns it down every year. She just turns it down. And then I thought it was going to be Harry Styles or Miley Cyrus. That was the rumors, but they went with Usher.
Wow.
All right. Well, good job. Yeah. Both teams got the points there. Let's go round one, question three. I do have a wrestling question, so let's ask a wrestling question. Name either of the two wrestlers who main evented the only WrestleMania where both competitors in the main event were billed by their given names, not a stage name or a nickname.
So, Jeff, I'm not sure if these two wrestlers main evented WrestleMania, but they always go by their real name, and I know they've fought before, so I'm just kind of hedging my bets.
Those are pretty sweet, cool, actual names.
Okay, so do you want to lock those in?
Sure, let's do it.
So these two went against each other, right, in the same WrestleMania? I think Kurt Angle's real name is Kurt Angle, wouldn't you say? Dave Bautista's real name is Dave Bautista. I don't know if they faced each other.
Hasn't Mick Foley wrestled under Mick Foley before?
That I don't know.
Okay. I got not a lot here.
I mean, we could just pull those two. I can maybe think maybe. Oh, he only needs one, people. He only needs one. So what do you want to say?
Was that
Dave Bautista? Kurt Angle would be my two.
I liked Kurt Angle more than Bautista. Let's go to Kurt Angle.
Kurt Angle.
So I could be wrong, but I believe Bautista in the WWE, his name was Bautista, but his real spelling, I think, is Bautista. Mm-hmm. They took out the heritage. We put down Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. We think they probably fought each other. And if we're only going to go with one, Brock Lesnar seems to main event more WrestleManias than anyone because Vince loves him. So we're going to lock in with Brock Lesnar.
So the answers are Lootbox said Brock Lesnar and Glutton said Kurt Angle.
Mm-hmm.
And those two fought each other in the main event. You had both sides of it. It was
wrestling question.
There you go. Brock Lesnar or Kurt Angle. Either of them would be correct. That's correct. Good job. Okay, let's move on to round one, question four. It is a Sunday, so let's have an NFL question. So other than my hometown Pittsburgh Steelers and Triviality's hometown Chicago Bears, name two of the other five NFL teams which do not have full-time competitive cheerleading squads.
I had a feeling this was a cheerleading question.
So before the game, John said that he was proficient with sports, and I'm no sports, we said. I don't know if your sports knowledge extends into the having or not having of cheerleading squads, but I'll leave it to you. I can say, though, the Cowboys confidently do have a cheerleading squad.
I can confirm.
I think we're going to go ahead and lock in one. I'm 95% sure of the other one. I'm feeling okay about, confident enough to persuade Neil. So we're going to go with that.
So, John, it's up to you.
Okay, so my head's going to places where it's cold, where they don't have a dome, and probably the team is like more sort of old and traditional. I know that kind of the Steelers are definitely that way. That's putting me towards the Packers, the Giants, the Browns, somewhere in there, just where like you don't want people doing cheerleading in December outdoors anyways. So
it's your call as I watch zero football.
Okay. If I had to choose, I would go with the Packers and the Giants.
Giants is a great guess. They're very traditional over there, the Rooney family and the Mara family.
Oh, yeah. That would be the Rooney Maras are the Steelers and the Giants family. So
right, and the whole family has dragon tattoos. But what did you put down, Jeff?
So Green Bay, I'm almost positive of. And I actually thought the majority of the teams in the NFC North didn't. So we guessed the Lions.
Okay. Well, one team is getting points there. And it was John who got – actually, all three of John's choices would have been correct.
Wow.
So the correct answers there, you could have said, and I think John said the Packers, the Giants, and the Browns. Those are all correct. And the other two you could have said were another very cold team, the Buffalo Bills.
Oh.
And then one very cheap West Coast team kind of near John, the Los Angeles Chargers. They do not have a cheerleading squad.
Wait a second. Did Buffalo recently get rid of them?
They used to have the Jills, I think they were
called.
Yeah, they're not there anymore.
Yeah, the Buffalo Jills.
Buffalo Jills.
They're not there anymore. Oh, okay.
Why would they get rid of that?
Probably because.
Can't imagine.
Yeah. Okay. All right, round one, question five. We'll get away from sports here for a second. Let's go to gifts. My wife and I in the next year are going to be celebrating 22 years together. But when we get to 35 years, the traditional wedding gift for the 35th wedding anniversaries is one of the few wedding gifts that at one time was alive. Name it.
Slugs.
Give her the You buy them at the first anniversary.
That's like
and
that.
See if they last.
That's like the meme going around now, where it's like, you know, would you get paid $10 million, but a snail is always coming at you and will never stop, and if it gets you, you die. But it's like for your 35th wedding anniversary, they set a snail when you get married, and it takes 35 years for it to get to you.
That's my best guess right now. I don't
think it's jade eggs, Jeff. But we could lock your answer in.
What about shells?
I was thinking like pearl or something. I don't know if that counts as.
Oh yeah, alive. Yeah. I mean, it's part of a. It's a part of a process. Right.
Flowers, wood. Those are both alive at one point.
Wood is one, but I don't think it's third. Oh, he said the only one that was once alive, right?
One of the few.
Oh, one of the few.
Yeah. Paper is theoretically.
I think
once
30
alive.
is too far along to do wood. So I like pearl.
Yeah, wood feels a little rich at that. But yeah, I'm good with that.
Pearl is a great answer. It's a DVD copy of the movie Pearl by Ty West.
Neil and I don't know what we were thinking. Maybe
DVD, low res.
Maybe we were thinking that at 35 years, you just want to make sure you keep that flame alive. And we said leather.
Ooh, okay. 10 points to me. John was close there with pearl. The answer is coral. Coral.
Coral.
The
Walking
kid from
Dead.
Walking Dead. Yeah. Coral.
Coral.
Yeah. So I hope I make it 35 years to give my wife a nice piece of coral. Dead, so. Anyway.
Coral. Well, it looks like both teams are at 30 points, so we're tied right now.
Okay. We're starting the second half of round one. Round one, question six. Categories: amusement parks. Two of the oldest still operational wooden roller coasters in the world share this animal name. One is located in Seabreeze Park in Rochester, New York. The other at Kennywood Park in Pittsburgh. Belonging to the genus Lepus, Mark Twain popularized the name of this small mammal in his book about Western adventure, Roughing It.
All right, we are going to lock in with something that's probably very wrong, but it sounds like a cool roller coaster.
Yeah, so I can think of some roller coasters named after larger mammals, but none for small mammals. So I was thinking like bull, buffalo, bison, buffalo, wolf. But we're talking about a small mammal. Bat?
The smaller ones just don't seem all that interesting for a name, like a roller coaster named after like a gopher, a prairie duck, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know...
It's the bunny coaster.
Maybe wolf, wolf, fox, something in that size.
Oh, fox. Yeah, maybe fox. What's that?
They're wooden roller coasters. Beavers eat wood. I don't know if they would.
I kind of like fox. I would consider that small.
Yeah.
And it's still like tough enough.
Fox or beaver.
Right. Let's say fox.
Yeah, this is well before the meme of like honey badger would be a coaster, right?
I love what John was saying there though, because I could see a roller coaster where it's like the beaver dam or something. When you're riding, you get a big jump. Like there's like a little animatronic beaver that looks like he's biting the wood and it's gonna break, and you think you're gonna crash, but you don't. Yeah, we wrote down badger, wolverine, and lynx. We had no idea, and Jeff said I love Hugh Jackman, so we said wolverine.
Oh, I thought you were gonna somehow back your way into that answer. You got very Links. Close there at the end with Hugh Jackman. If I ever get the Triviality Crew to Pittsburgh, we'll take you to Kennywood and we'll put you on the Jackrabbit with all of its jumps.
Wow.
It is the Jackrabbit.
Mm. Okay, so not bunny rabbit, but Jackrabbit.
Jackrabbit.
That does sound
cool. Are those like the really huge rabbits?
They're technically hares. I was looking them up. They have like big ears and stuff, but none of them are near Pittsburgh.
They look like real grinders.
Yeah, grimy
real
rabbits.
Real sinewy. Like
Jackrabbit grinder?
Is that a sandwich? What is a Jackrabbit grinder?
It's an app for jackrabbits.
Okay. There you go.
Oh, I thought Jackrabbit grinder was...
John is working on that, right? Fine. I think.
Yeah.
No, I'm responsible for the ads.
Okay. All right. Round one, question seven, television. This question was actually inspired by a book I was recently reading. It was called Behind the Scenes, Illustrated Floor Plans and Scenes from the Best TV Shows of All Time. So here we go. So while the floor plan...
Overrated.
So while the floor plan for the home in this sitcom was nothing particularly memorable, featuring most prominently a couch in the middle of the living room, the home in question was located at 9764 Jeopardy Lane in Chicago. Legend has it that the home was built on a landfill used by Native Americans where they would discard their old moccasins. Name the show.
You already have this right now?
Yeah, we can lock in.
Okay, cool.
Would this be maybe All in the Family or Family Matters. Family Matters was definitely in Chicago.
Yeah, I was trying to, was Different Strokes Chicago or New York?
That I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if the discarding old moccasins is supposed to be leading me somewhere.
Maybe that's why Urkel turned into Stefan Urkel. Let's say Family Matters, shall we?
Works for me.
Was this person a shoe salesman, Neil?
He was a shoe salesman. Yeah, this is a show I think people forget took place in Chicago, and it's often kind of forgotten, even though it has sort of a darker humor to it. But we said Married with Children.
Oh.
Yeah, and Lootbox is getting points there. It is Married with Children. The moccasins was a little clue I dropped in there. But yeah, Married with Children is the correct answer. Great job. Okay, round one, question 8. Category is colleges. What is the only full-time member of the Big Ten to ever leave the conference? This founding school was in the conference for 50 years before leaving in 1946, although there is still one current member of the Big Ten within 20 miles of this former member's campus. Name it.
Well, as you know, the only thing I know less about than sports is college sports. So I'll leave this to you.
Neil and I have discussed. We have an answer we like. We'll see if it's the right one.
What are you thinking, John?
So, first Heisman winner went to UChicago. And I know Northwestern is probably within 20 miles of UChicago, and that is a current Big Ten school. So I would think, I mean, my brain's going to either UChicago or DePaul, but yeah, I would probably go with UChicago over DePaul, but it would be one of those two.
That sounds good.
So where exactly did Berwanger go? Do you remember, Ken?
No, I know it's Berwanger, though.
We also guessed University of Chicago.
Well, that is a great poll by someone who's not in Chicago for John there. It is the University of Chicago, founding member of the Big Ten.
Nice. Nice job. John is a very good sports trivia player, as we found out here, and trivia player overall.
Yes, he is.
I thought this was bench warmers, but yeah. Working okay.
Not quite. All right, so round one, question 9, the category is travel. So according to the UN tourism rankings, what is by far the most visited Caribbean country in terms of annual worldwide tourists per year?
All right, Jeff, I like your answer, and I'll just trust you. We'll see if you're wrong.
Whoa.
All right.
Fired.
I'm thinking Jamaica and Bahamas.
Those are the two I was thinking of.
Probably.
Come on,
thought of Jamaica first, but really, I could see either.
Jamaica's larger.
That is true. That's true.
And they have sandals resorts.
By what marking?
What about barefoot resorts too?
Saying larger.
Like, larger.
Where's that big like Atlantis resort? Isn't that a big thing? No.
That's in Bahamas.
That's in Bahamas.
Ken and I saw it from the other side of an island.
Yeah, gun to my head, I'd take Bahamas, but it's 51-49.
That was kind of my gut, and I kind of convinced myself of Jamaica, but since you're saying Bahamas, I'm happy to go with it.
Let's do it.
All right, Bahamas.
Mm. That's funny because I thought Bahamas, Jeff Jot, Jamaica.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I want to rule Cuba out right away because obviously Americans still don't go there really. But Bahamas, I should have thought about because a lot of cruise ships stop in Nassau, but we locked in Jamaica.
Ooh, so do we have one Bahamas and one Jamaica?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it could be good news or bad news for the crew that it was neither of those two choices. The answer by far is the Dominican Republic.
Oh,
my parents are there right now.
There you go.
Is that true? Ken. That's funny.
No way. The DR? They're in the DR right now?
They go all the time.
Hedonism.
See, they're doing all the rankings.
They go to Punta Cana all the time.
Oh, crap, Punta Cana is in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah. All right, let's finish up the first half of the game, round one, with a question about politics. Who is the only major party U.S. politician in history to lose a statewide election in every U.S. state?
I kind of want to go with that. I think you're onto something. I don't know if it's quite there, but it's a very smart guess.
All right, so you guys are locked in. So we're trying to think of maybe like a blowout presidential candidate. I think Reagan won very handily one time in every state, correct?
I remembered, I thought in 84 he beat Mondale in 49 states, except for, I think, Minnesota, where Mondale was from. I thought it was like almost a clean sweep, but not quite. But I could be wrong on that. But I don't know who I would guess other than Walter Mondale. Right. I don't know a guy who lost more than that.
All right, we'll say Walter Mondale.
Yeah, we were thinking along the same lines, although I thought maybe if they had run in a previous election and had lost in that one state. But we guessed Dukakis in this case.
Because Mondale could have lost a state election at some point in his career before also. So
the two guesses there are Walter Mondale for the Gluttons and Dukakis for the Loot Box?
Yes.
Well, points are going out, and the points are going out to the Gluttons. It is Walter Mondale. In 1984, he lost 49 of 50 states. And then when Paul Wellstone, as a senator, was killed in an airplane crash, he subbed in on the Democratic ticket and lost a senatorial election afterwards to Norm Coleman. So he lost a statewide election in Minnesota, and that was the only state he won in the 84 presidential election.
Wow.
I knew you were onto something. We had the wrong Democrat.
Yeah. Well, we tried. But speaking of elections and numbers coming in, the numbers for the scores after the first round are tied 50-50. So nothing's really budging here. Now, Ken, I know when we talk about our Patreon bonuses, you often have the best time doing the crop drop. Is that right?
That's right. Love the ask me anything style questions. And we just kind of answer off the cuff. We don't usually review the questions beforehand. Mm-hmm. So just kind of getting a little bit of our personality and some of our opinions, too.
Yeah, those are always fun. And speaking of the patrons who we know are also listening to this, the regular Patreon bonuses are a great way for someone who maybe, wrote, say, 15 questions or so, doesn't have the time to write a full game for us to host, but maybe wants to come and hang out with us, ask some questions, just have a good time. And that's why we like to invite as many patrons as we can to do our regular Triviality Patreon bonus, which is 15 questions, just to wet your beak a little bit, get you in the mood for trivia. If you'd like to do that, just email us and we'll make sure that we get you on one of those because those are always fun. But most of all, we just can't do this show without our patrons. So if you'd like to join John and David, you can go to patreon.com/trivialitypodcast. And as we've mentioned in our team name the entire game, if you're at the $20 level or higher, you get a loot box made by one of us that is customized to you. So
mine are going to have jade eggs in it next cycle.
Okay, well, yeah, that's a promise from Ken. Jade eggs in the loot box. But
that is not a promise.
Just like Walter Mondale, apparently. Couldn't keep his promises. But,
that's right.
But yes, join us at patreon.com/trivialitypodcast, and we're going to throw it back to David over in Pittsburgh, and I'm hoping that he'll give me a burnt almond torch, but we want to swing around right now. So.
Well, you did mention Pittsburgh, and so one of the times I hosted before, I did also a board game. So the swing around today is also a bowl game. So like you said, fall is in the air, and it brings the eternal disappointment of my Pitt Panthers and the college football season. I will give 10 questions, and the answer to each question is also the name of a college football bowl game which Pitt has played in. So please note, some bowl games have traditional names. Some are named by sponsors, but the answer to each question will be the name of the game when Pitt played in it. I will also give the year Pitt last played in the game and the score. So here we go. Number one, surname of the golfer with the sixth highest earnings in the history of the PGA Tour. 1937, Pitt 21, Washington 0. Number two, Maroon 5 song, which reached number two on the Billboard Top 100 chart in 2015. 1980, Pitt 24, Georgia 20. Number three, Clue character, first introduced in the 1985 VHS game, has been a part of many subsequent board game editions of the game. 2021, Michigan State 31, Pitt 21. Number four, name of the nightclub which allegedly inspired the Paint Club in Who Framed Roger Rabbit? 1983, SMU 7, Pitt 3. Number five, Will Ferrell's alter ego and the other guys who just need some walking around money. 1980, Pitt 37, South Carolina 9. Number six, the radioactive brand of this dinnerware is highly collectible. 1979, Pitt 16, Arizona 10. Number seven, currently the third largest pizza chain by total sales in the United States. 2013, Pitt 30, Bowling Green 27. Number eight, colorfully named state flower of Texas. 1987, Texas 32, Pitt 27. Number nine, publicly traded global IT Fortune 500 company. The NASDAQ stock symbol is NSIT. 2002, Pitt 38, Oregon State 13. And number 10, founding father and first governor of the state of Massachusetts, 1989, Pitt 31, Texas A&M 28.
All right, everybody but me will be thinking about these answers, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. If you love old movies, Hollywood history, or the golden age of filmmaking, you've come to the right place. This is the podcast that talks about amazing stories of Tinseltown from another era and fascinating conversations with writer-producer Steve Kubine and actress-writer Nan McNamara.
One particular argument, he ended up dislocating Ava's jaw. Ava, she was such a tough cookie. Rather than cry or scream or anything like that, she...
Or call the police.
She should have, exactly. What does she do? She takes an ashtray and she knocks him over the head and knocks him unconscious. That's how she fought back. She didn't know what to do, so she called Louis B. Mayer. I think I've killed Howard Hughes. What do I do?
Revisit a time when the pictures were still big and everyone was ready for their close-up. When you want Tyrone Power instead of Tom Hardy, Jennifer Jones instead of Jennifer Lawrence, or Robert Mitchum rather than Robert Pattinson, then From Beneath the Hollywood Sign is the gin joint for you.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we are back. We have some answers, and we'll see how we did.
Okay, so the swing round was a sports category, but not really. But you know, if any of you got this from the pit scores, I'd be impressed. But probably from the other hints. So number one, surname of the golfer with the sixth highest earnings in the history of the PGA Tour, 1937, Pitt 21, Washington 0.
And so we went to the Davis Love the Third Bowl. No, it was a player.
Oh, player's a good one, Gary Player.
Yeah, player's a really good one. So our logic on this one is we named all the golfers we could, and we didn't think any of them sounded like a bowl. And after we couldn't figure out a few of the answers, we said one of these has to be Rose Bowl, so we just put Rose Bowl right at number one.
So two ways you could have got this. Number one, a Pac-12 team is playing in the game, Washington, so that should probably lead you to the Rose Bowl. The other one is Justin Rose is the sixth highest earning golfer in the history of the PGA Tour. All of the golfers who have earned the most money have played very recently, so it is the Rose Bowl.
Oh, so there is a golfer named Rose.
Yeah, Justin Rose.
We didn't think there was a Woods Bowl, so
yeah, it wasn't Anthony Tostito.
I knew there was no Bryson DeChambeau, so
that would be a good name though.
Yeah, are these adjusted for inflation? No.
So number two, Maroon 5 song which reached number two on the Billboard Top 100 in 2015.
Not to be confused with the System of a Down jam of the same name, we said Sugar.
Oh, the Animal Bowl. What did we say, Neil?
We said Sugar.
Ah, that's the one.
Yeah, 1980, Pitt beat Georgia 24-20, and they won the national championship in this bowl game 4 years earlier. It is New Orleans, the Sugar Bowl. Number three, Clue character first introduced in the 1985 VHS game has been a part of many subsequent board game editions of the game. Pitt last played in this game in 2021, just 2 years ago. Michigan State 31, Pitt 21.
Yeah, we guessed Peacock.
I thought this was the one named after Neil since he's a sweet Georgia peach, and we said the Peach Bowl.
Yeah, my family has a tradition of driving to Pitt bowl games only to see starting quarterbacks either not play or get hurt. Kenny Pickett didn't play in this game. It was the Peach Bowl. Number four, name of the nightclub which allegedly inspired the Paint Club in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, 1983. Future ACC opponent SMU 7, Pitt 3.
For this one, we reasoned that it might be Cotton.
Yeah, we knew the Cotton Club was very famous, and we knew there's a Cotton Bowl, so we said Cotton as well.
No, it points to both teams. It was the Cotton Bowl. Good job. Number five, Will Ferrell's alter ego and the other guys who just need some walking around money. 1980, Pitt 37, South Carolina 9.
Seen the movie, don't remember it. We guessed Orange.
We just said what would be an intimidating nickname. We went Gator.
Yeah, Will Ferrell's character, definitely not a pimp. That is Gator. Gator Bowl. Number six, the radioactive brand of this dinnerware is highly collectible. 1979, Pitt 16, Arizona 10.
Well, our old band instructor used to collect, and it still does, right?
He does, yeah.
Fiesta wear. So we said Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, we got a nice little set for our recent wedding. We said Fiesta.
Well, I doubt that. Maybe it does. I don't know. If they get you a set of dinnerware that's old enough, it would have some uranium in it. That's the collectible kind. It is Fiesta. Number 7, currently the third largest pizza chain by total sales in the United States, 2013, Pit 30, Bowling Green 27.
Kicking around a couple of guesses, Little Caesars, but ended up on Papa John's.
Yeah, we guessed Little Caesars.
Well, you guys named the third and the fourth largest pizza chains in the U.S., but it is Detroit's own Little Caesars was the answer to that one, the Little Caesars man, bowl.
This is not going our way here, John.
Number 8.
I thought there was going to be some defunct ones on here, so.
Number 8, colorfully named State Flower of Texas, 1987, Texas 32, Pit 27. This is a defunct bowl game.
I think this is the now I'm second guessing if it's Bluebell or Blue Bonnet. I'm going to say Bluebell.
Yeah, this one we had no idea that it was a bowl game, but I know that the Texas Flower is the Blue Bonnet. So we said Blue Bonnet.
Oh, John was so close. It is the Blue Bonnet Bowl. He almost said it too at the end too. Yeah, Blue Bonnet.
Paul Neil on that one.
Number 9, publicly traded global IT Fortune 500 company, NASDAQ stock symbol NSIT. 2002, Pit 38, Oregon State 13.
We went with Northrop Grumman. I know they do the military bowl sometimes.
Ooh, interesting. We said Insight. I think that's their stock ticker.
Yeah, if you search highlights of this game, the most famous play is Larry Fitzgerald made an unbelievable catch in his freshman year. It is the Insight Bowl. And finally, founding father and first governor of the state of Massachusetts, 1989, Pit 31, Texas A&M 28.
We just kind of guessed Hancock for this one.
That sounds like a much cooler bowl. We had no idea. We just said Adams.
Well, points are going to Gluttons on this one. That was an insurance company, and it did sponsor the Sun, what is now the Sun Bowl. It was the John Hancock Bowl. So good job.
Well, we are happy to escape this round with 20 points.
And we picked up 40, so it looks like our total is going to be 90 to 70.
Okay, moving on to the second half of the game, round two. Round two, question one, is in food. So the origins of which American Chinese food staple item are unclear, but probably traced back to one of two New York City chefs in the 1930s. The first recipe was printed in a 1938 cookbook, which included ingredients such as bamboo shoots, roast pork, and shrimp, but notably did not include the main ingredient of the dish. Name it.
So I'm thinking maybe egg foo young for this one?
That would make sense. I've been kind of kicking around just, you know, General Tso's chicken, things of that nature, but no, that makes more sense.
Yeah, mixing the pork and the shrimp is kind of more indicative of that sort of thing, and also missing the main ingredient, which would be the egg. So, egg foo young.
It's got to be not a pork or shrimp dish, then. Yeah, no, good with that.
We figured that the egg was also missing from our choice, but we just guessed the humble egg roll.
The main ingredient of the dish is cabbage. It is the egg roll.
Son of a bitch. Getting killed today.
I thought you were going to say it, Ken. All right. Round two, question two. The category is gambling. So in craps, what is the total number for the role nicknamed a ballerina?
Neil, I've got no idea. I've played craps, and I've never heard of this. So I'm good with any guess, really.
All right. We're going to lock in a guess here.
So where my head's going is that it could be four because it's made of two twos.
Like, yeah.
But I mean, kind of dumb, but like, that's all I got.
So. It's all dumb.
Yeah.
Just all that crap stuff is dumb. So I like it.
Let's go with four for two and two.
I don't think it's dumb. I think it's clever. What did we say?
Yeah, that's a really great guess here. We just picked eight because it kind of looks like some sort of dance sequence.
That's
so.
Boxcars.
Hmm.
Well, points are going there and they're going to John, and I appreciate, let's get the dumb ones right. So that is a two and a two. And that is four, and that is a ballerina roll. So great job.
Why is it called boxcars?
Boxcars are a 12, right?
Oh, see?
Eight.
Boxcars are a 12, six and a six.
Is it a hard eight? No?
Hard eight is a four and a four. Yeah.
Oh, you're probably right.
Boxcars are slang for 12, also called midnight.
Oh, there you go.
Well, the midnight I get because 12 o'clock, but I still don't get the boxcars, Neil. The thing that you said you were going to look up for me.
The spots on the two dice look like schematic drawings of railroad boxcars.
Oh, okay. So some engineer. Just kidding.
Okay, let's go. Where are we at? Round two, question three. The category is the Oscars. So name the most recent Best Picture winner to finish a calendar year in the top 25 of the domestic U.S. box office.
So, Jeff, I wrote down two movies. Both of them are definitely on this list, and I can't think of one that was more recent. So we're just going to lock in with one.
Yeah, and it would be a really good trivia question if that's the right answer. So,
yeah, so it sounds like they're going kind of far back here, John. I'm kind of encouraged to go kind of far back as well. Top 25, I mean, it sounds like a lot, but these Oscar movies really don't chart very high usually. So do you have anything off the top of your head?
So I'm guessing we don't go further back than Return of the King.
Yes, I think Return of the King definitely makes the list, and that's sort of my inclination is to go with that. I'm trying to think of one that might be in the top 25 otherwise.
So I thought Everything Everywhere did pretty well, but that seems too recent. Like, I don't know if it's like a trick. But I mean, I thought that, you know, that was more mainstream than like some of the other stuff that wins. But it is literally
possibly, but top 25, especially in the era of the superheroes, and they just crank all these blockbusters out all the time. It was probably limited release at first.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of wondering the time of the year. Like, most of these end up getting released sort of in the like Q4 period, so they probably don't get a very high individual calendar box office compared to like a summer superhero release.
I'm inclined to go all the way back to Lord of the Rings.
I don't hate that. I can't think of one. I mean, did The Departed win Best Picture?
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
That's almost certainly, and that's more recent, and my guess is that's probably top 20. I mean, it's R-rated, but maybe that's top 25.
Maybe. I could go with that.
God, I can't afford to go much further down. I could be happy with either of those.
All right, let's go with yours. Let's go with Departed.
I was thinking about The Departed. I wrote that down. I wrote Gladiator. I mean, I don't think Argo made that much money, but yeah, we kind of...
No, Argo did not.
we went down to Return of the King, Lord of the Rings. We just knew that one definitely made a ton of money, but I think the trick here in this well-worded question is that it just had to hit the top 25, so it could be a lot more of a smaller movie. But anyway, we went Return of the King.
Well, thanks for the compliment on the question, Neil. The reason I said top 25 is last year, Everything Everywhere All at Once finished like 27th, and I didn't want it to be a trick with it being last year's. You don't have to go back as far as Lord of the Rings. It is the dumb answer that you guys bannered around. It was Argo, number 25, in there. And the King's Speech the year before also finished in the top 25 too. But Argo was Argo was released a year later.
Those are some soft years.
Yeah, I wrote Argo because I knew it was popular. I didn't really realize it was that popular, but
made a couple hundred million. Okay, round.
I'm shocked.
Round two, question four. I think this is my last sports question of the game. Hall of Fame. So in 2023, Aliquippa High School outside of Pittsburgh became the first and only high school with three alums in the NFL Hall of Fame. Name the 2023 inductee who also played college football at the University of Pittsburgh. And for one bonus point each, name the other two members.
I feel good about the one. I might be able to scrape one of the other two.
All right, Jeff and I, we think we figured out the 2023 inductee, and we have only one bonus answer that we think's 100% correct. So we'll try for the bonus.
So I've got in my head that this is Darrell Revis. Maybe he's been out of the league for more than like 5 years, but I think he went to Pitt. I think for the other guys, I think Tony Dorsett is an old Pitt guy. If I had to guess another one, I think Curtis Martin went to Pitt as well and might be from around the area. So if I got to go, I'm guessing main guest Darrell Revis and then Tony Dorsett and the other guy, Curtis Martin, that I said for the other two for the bonus.
And we think that 2023 had Larry Fitzgerald inducted, and we heard David say his name a little bit earlier. I'm pretty sure he did go to Pitt now that I think about it. And then our bonus, we just assumed it'd have to be Dan Marino. So that's what we locked him with.
Well, I get to drop some high schools here in Pittsburgh. So first of all, the 2023 inductee, good job, John. It was Darrell Revis. Darrell Revis is from Aliquippa, so you get full points on that one. Larry Fitzgerald went to high school in Minnesota, and I don't even think he's technically retired yet for some odd reason. So I don't know that he's eligible yet for the Hall of Fame. And the other two people you could have named, Tony Dorsett is from Hopewell High School, which is very close to Aliquippa. Curtis Martin went to my father's high school, Alderdice. But the other two you could have named, a little disappointed in the Chicago crew, Mike Ditka is one. And then the other one is Ty Law. Ty Law and Mike Ditka are the other two bonus answers. So all three went to Aliquippa High School. All right, round two, question five. Category is U.S. history. So name the 19th century Lakota chief known for his skill as a military commander who was the first Native American to win a war against the United States. JFK apparently wanted to name a U.S. submarine after him, but declined as he was worried the name would evoke fears of communist sympathies.
Anything jumping out at you right away?
I think Sitting Bull was a Sioux chief, which I think is like Lakota Sioux. I think those are related at least. Mm-hmm.
Now, why would it evoke fears of communist sympathies?
Only thing I can get in, it was like maybe sit-ins or something, but that's only kind of, I mean, that's not really the same thing. Yeah. Maybe
what about red something, yeah. Red.
Is there like a chief red hawk or red something?
Yeah, maybe. I'm really not sure. I could go with Red Hawk though.
Let's go Sitting Bull. Why not?
At least then we have a actual figure for sure.
There you go. Yeah, I know that's a real person.
We wrote down Sitting Bull, and before I had heard the communist clue there, I wrote down Red Cloud, which I read about also fighting American military, and we actually locked in with Red Cloud.
It is Red Cloud. It's sort of hard to get that one, but I hope the hint would have led you to Red, and then we'll see. But it was Red Cloud.
We got half of it.
Yeah,
so. It did verify our inclinations, so glad you had it in there.
At the end of the first five, both teams picking up 20 points, bringing our totals to 90. For the Glutton for Punishment and 110 for What's in the Loot Box. So very close game.
I feel like we're getting crushed, but really not too bad.
Yeah, that swing round just really took a lot of wind out of my sails. But
you're getting crushed almost in proportion to us.
There's plenty of game left here and plenty of time for the Gluttons to take over. So here we go. Round two, question six. The category is television. So NBC is known for their long-running late-night show, The Tonight Show, as well as their even longer-running morning show, The Today Show. What similarly titled program did Tom Snyder host from 1973 to 1981? The show aired at 1 a.m. Eastern Time and was notable for its interviews with subjects such as John Lennon and the full original cast of SNL.
Neil and I kind of cobbled together an answer here, and we'll see if it's right.
Okay. So we got late night. I mean, that sort of fits the scheme, right? Tonight Show, Today Show, late night.
Yeah, it could be like a midnight show or the early morning show or something to that effect. There's a late show. I think that might be CBS.
Yeah, I think so.
And it doesn't really follow the pattern.
So we'll say late night then.
Yeah, we figured if it was late night, then it would be continued on to today, presumably. So we took a stab at something that is just a guess based on the 1 a.m. time slot, and we said after midnight.
Ooh, 10 more points for me. Late night, I think, was started with David Letterman. After midnight mm-hmm. was when this aired, but you had today. You had tonight, and Tom Snyder hosted tomorrow. It was the tomorrow show.
Oh, it was a simple tomorrow. Okay. We wrote down tomorrow, but we were like, would they really name the show that? But yeah.
Yep.
Isn't it After Midnight a movie or something?
After Hours is a movie. Scorsese movie.
After Midnight, we're going to let it all hang out.
Okay. With Griffin Dunn. At Midnight is the show hosted by Chris Hardwick.
I'm thinking of a Linklater one. Which one am I thinking of? Like After Dawn or something?
Oh, you're thinking Before Sunrise, Before Sunset. After sunset, yeah.
There you go.
Okay, round two, question seven, category is business. Here we go. The Green family, specifically brothers Stephen and David, created controversy last decade when numerous items, mostly clay tablets and ceramic tiles, which they arranged to be shipped and donated to their Museum of the Bible, were in fact looted and smuggled from the Middle East. The Greens are the president and CEO of which company, which was forced to pay a $3 million fine and return almost 12,000 items to Iraq and Egypt? This retail chain has just under 1,000 stores in the U.S.
Looks like John knows this one cold, so we're good to go.
Created controversy when they arranged to be shipped and donated to their... Oh, Museum of the Bible. Okay, so we're looking for stores with less than 1,000 that are Bible obsessed or into the Bible. So what about Hobby Lobby?
Maybe.
I don't know if they have that many stores, but...
It could be them, for sure. Definitely, Chick-fil-A has more than 1,000, and they have a very religious association.
What's that other one called? Tuesday Morning? I don't know if that's a religious...
Yeah.
Is Hobby Lobby national? Would they have...
I think so. Jokingly, I was going to say Anthropology, but...
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's quite right. I don't mind Hobby Lobby for this.
Okay. Yeah, we'll lock in Hobby Lobby.
Yeah, pretty sure this is Hobby Lobby.
It was not Chick-fil-A. It was Hobby Lobby. They had to pay a giant fine because they were stealing things from the Middle East. It was Hobby Lobby.
Can't do that.
It's a shame, too, because every Sunday when we record, we try to go to Hobby Lobby to get some decorative plants and signs to put in the studio, but it's never open.
Don't you know you can't steal from the Middle East unless you're called the British Museum?
That's true. Right. You have to be British. That's right.
They're actually selling Live, Laugh, Love tablets. It was great.
All right. Well, good job there. Both teams got points. Round two, question eight, the category is musicals. Andrew Lloyd Webber's most recent competitive Tony nomination for his work composing the score to which 2015 musical. The musical is adapted and shares its name with a 2003 film starring Jack Black.
That was Jack Black's heyday. So we got our work cut out for us here.
Jeff, we can lock in with Shallow Hal the musical.
That was the first movie I thought about.
It's like Orange County.
That is 2003 era. Was Orange County.
Saving Silverman. I think this might be. Didn't they make a musical out of School of Rock?
Yeah. Would Andrew Lloyd Webber have? Yeah. I mean, that's cool. Yeah.
It's the of the black films of the era. It's the closest one I can really get to a musical because otherwise, like you said, it's you're looking at Shallow Hal or Orange County.
Yeah. Okay. School of Rock.
If there's money, Ken, I think Andrew Lloyd Webber will do whatever it takes to get there.
I see.
But yeah, this show kind of birthed the career of Alex Brightman, who's a great Broadway star. He was the lead in Beetlejuice. We also said School of Rock.
Well, I love the idea for a Shallow Hal musical. Where can I throw my money into that? That would be unbelievable. But the teams...
In this day and age?
I don't know. Probably not politically correct. But both teams getting points, and both teams are on a roll. It is School of Rock. Good job. Okay, round one.
Alex Brightman's great.
Mm-hmm.
Two Tony nominations, two Tony losses, though.
Yep, that's right.
And we're just going to let this Shallow Hal reference pass without a Jade Egg reference to follow. So,
okay, round two, question nine. Back to politics and elections. So name either of the two states, one Midwestern, one Southeastern, which Barack Obama won in 2008 against John McCain, but lost in 2012 against Mitt Romney. The electoral maps were exactly the same, except Mitt Romney won two states that John McCain didn't.
Neil and I discussed, this map is a lot harder to see in my head than I thought it would be, but we're going to go ahead and lock in.
So, yeah, sort of like they talked about, I have it in my head that he won Florida both times. The southeastern states that I think it could be are North Carolina and Georgia. The Midwestern states, if I had to guess, would be either of Ohio or Iowa. I would lean more towards Iowa because I think that Ohio had that thing where like you had to win it to win the presidency forever. But so those would be my pairs of guesses for the two ones. What are you thinking?
Well, if you're pretty confident about what was it, South Carolina and Georgia?
North Carolina or
North
Georgia.
Carolina.
I thought it was one of those.
I think not Georgia because I think it was pretty like crazy, like unique that Biden won Georgia.
Sure.
I would go with the other one, but whatever you think on that one. Ohio sounded good to me. Iowa, I wouldn't know either way because it's not usually that influential, to be honest.
Got it. Well, I think it would just have to flip. If it's up to me, I'm guessing Iowa and North Carolina, but I'm iffy on both.
We just need one. Just whichever one you feel strong about. Yeah, just one.
Oh, crap. Okay. So feel better about North Carolina then?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Let's do it.
So really racking my brain. I had a feeling I could figure out the one in the Midwest, but it was going to take me a bit. Ohio, Wisconsin, they can dive around a little bit, but I think the thing here that clinches it for me is, I want to say weirdly, usually voting for Republicans, I think Indiana did vote for Barack in the Electoral College in 2008. So we're going to go Indiana.
So we all have different ideas and thoughts. Yeah. About this.
So the glutton said North Carolina and the loot box said Indiana, correct?
Yeah.
And points are going to both teams. Those are the two states. It was Indiana and North Carolina. Good job. All right. Last question of the regular game. Round two, question 10. The category is reality TV. So of all of the individuals who have been full-time judges on American Idol for at least one season, who has the most Grammy Awards?
We are going to lock in with a guess here.
All right. So I was thinking maybe Paula Abdul.
Paula Abdul.
That is straight up the best answer I've heard all day.
How many hosts do you know? I know the
Katy Perry did it. Maybe she's got a few.
I would say Katy Perry over Paula Abdul probably. Wasn't Randy Jackson was like a producer, right?
So yeah, I don't probably.
Know I don't know if he's got a bunch of like sneaky Grammy credits.
Yeah,
or something
that's
like that.
I was thinking that too.
I mean, I'd probably guess. Did Carrie Underwood host it? Did she? I know she won it or was on it.
I don't know.
Or does she just have a bunch of CMAs?
Yeah, true. That's there is kind of the whole parallel system there. I would go with Katy Perry of those, either of Paula Abdul or Randy Jackson, I could be okay with as well.
Okay. We'll go with Katy Perry then.
Well, Neil, we know it's not Luke Bryan. So who what do you think?
Yeah, we wrote down J-Lo as well, but I don't think she's won any, or she's only won one. And Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, I don't think he's won any Grammys either. So we wrote down Lionel Richie, and I remember Mariah Carey was a host, but I don't think she was full-time. So we said Lionel Richie.
She was a full-time judge for 1 year. It was Mariah Carey.
Oh, I didn't think it was that long.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's the trick to that one. She just her and I think Nicki Minaj was another judge that year. They were just on for 1 year and then off.
Going into the final, it looks like the entire second round was basically the same for both teams. Both teams picking up 50 points each, batting 50%, which brings our totals to 120 for the Glutton for Punishment and 140 for What's in the Loot Box.
Okay, so here are the categories for the final round. They are all decades. So category one, question one, is in the 60s. It is a music question. Category two is the 70s, a movies question. Category three, the 80s, food and drink. Category four, the 90s, sports. And category five, the 2000s, TV.
The wagers are now locked in. Let's go ahead and get the final round questions.
All right, so question number one, 60s, music question. The TAMI Show was an influential concert film filmed in 1964 in Santa Monica, California. The concert is perhaps best remembered for a performance by which musician? An icon in numerous genres, including funk and soul, and one of the inaugural members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Rolling Stones directly followed this singer, and Keith Richards said that following him was the worst mistake of their careers, as no matter how well they performed, they could not top him. Name the musician. Question two, 70s, movies question. John Cazale's brief career was legendary in that he starred in five films, all nominated for Best Picture. What was Cazale's final film, parts of which were filmed just outside of Pittsburgh? Number three, the 80s, a food and drink question. The lineage of lemon-lime sodas offered by Pepsi goes from Starry, currently, back to Sierra Mist, and then beginning with which brand of drink, debuting in 1984? Question number four, 90s, sports question. The alternate uniform trend really took off in the 1990s, perhaps most notably in the NBA, where many of the alternate jerseys have been revived in recent years as classic jerseys for current teams. Which team in 1990 had an alternate blue and white tie-dye jersey, a fan favorite which was brought back in 2020 for the 30th anniversary? Finally, number five, 2000s, TV question. Between 2000 and 2010, three series won the Emmy for Outstanding Drama Series for the first season of their show. Two were network shows. One was a cable program. Name two of the three series.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The Nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the Nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
And all the answers are now in. Let's hear the questions one more time and see who will be today's cream of the crop after this slugfest.
Okay, final round started with a music question from the 60s. The TAMI show was an influential concert film filmed in 1964 in Santa Monica, California. Who performed at that concert in an iconic performance? Influencer of genres such as funk and soul and one of the inaugural members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that Rolling Stone's Keith Richards said they made a giant mistake following him. What was the guesses?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to follow James Brown. So for 5 points, we said James Brown.
Yeah, initially, Jeff and I thought they were talking about the Triviality TMI show, which no one wants to follow, but we quickly realized it was the
TMI. We call that the crop drop, yeah, and crop it's drop. Available for patrons.
But yeah, we said James Brown as well.
How many points?
For 30 points.
Oh. Hope we're wrong.
Yeah, you sort of have that to hope you got that often. One wrong there. But unfortunately, you guys both got that right. It was James Brown.
Boo.
you're not booing James Brown. You're just booing that you lost points.
Yes.
Do the hot tub.
No, we gained points. Or that you gained more.
Right, right.
Okay, so moving on to the 70s and movies question. John Cazale's brief career was legendary. He starred in 5 films, and all of them were nominated for Best Picture. What was Cazale's final film, parts of which were filmed just outside of Pittsburgh?
Do you want to take this one for 15 points, John?
Yeah, I feel like this is something that I saw fairly recently, and we were both stuck on Deer Hunter, so going with the Deer Hunter.
Yeah, John is right on the money. It's one of my favorite trivia facts. You got Godfather 1 and 2, Conversation, Dog Day Afternoon, and Deer Hunter. That's what we locked in with.
Yeah, Deer Hunter is set in Clarendon, PA, but I believe parts of it were filmed in McKeesport, PA. Most of it was filmed, I think, in Ohio, but it is the Deer Hunter.
Not in Vietnam.
No, Christopher Walken was in his contract. No Vietnam.
All right. And the question that might swing the final round, the 80s food and drink question. The lineage of lemon lime sodas offered by Pepsi goes from Starry back to Sierra Mist and then beginning with which brand of drink debuting in 1984?
For 5 points again, we said Mellow Yellow.
We had thrown Mellow Yellow around, but I believe that's the Coke version of Mountain Dew. We said Slice.
How many points?
20.
Well, Slice would fit, as there is Starry and there is Sierra Mist, and you would have three S words. John correctly noted that Slice does have an orange variety, Mandarin Orange Slice, but they started with a lemon-lime variety. It is Slice.
Well, I was like, if you get me started, there's going to be some other S words flying around here, David. So.
All right, number 4, the 90s sports. The alternative uniform trend really took off in the 90s, perhaps notably in the NBA, where many of the alternate jerseys have been revived as classic jerseys for current teams. What team in 1990 had an alternate blue and white tie-dye jersey, a fan favorite brought back in 2020 for its 30th anniversary?
For 15 points, John, what do we have?
I thought I remembered this being a Nets thing, so we said the Nets.
We agree. We said the Nets.
How many points?
30.
Well, the gluttons somehow can't get ahead here, because every time they get it right, the other team gets it right. It's one of the best uniforms. Drazen Petrovic, the late Drazen Petrovic, would wear him. It is the New Jersey Nets.
Well then, Brooklyn by the time they brought it back, right?
Brooklyn then, but yeah, New Jersey first. So final question of the game, 2000s television. Between 2000 and 2010, three series won the Emmy for Best Outstanding Drama Series for the first season of their show. Two were network shows. One was a basic cable program. Name two of the three series.
For 15 points, we said 24 and Lost.
I think Lost was one of them at one point. I can't remember if it was before 2010. But yeah, we said The West Wing and The Sopranos. And then we had Mad Men, but we just didn't officially lock that one in.
So your guess was Sopranos and West Wing?
And West Wing, yeah.
Well, all three answers were said, but no one's getting points. It is The West Wing, Lost, and Mad Men.
Oh.
Ooh.
Sopranos, I must have been 99.
Yeah. The scores are all tabulated, and it looks like Team
Glutton for Punishment.
Glutton for Punishment is going to pick up 15 points, bringing their total to 135. And Team What's in the Loot Box is going to be picking up 80 points, bringing their total to 220. So 100
looks like
point
you're,
swing.
You're winning the Jade Egg today.
Oh, the Jade Egg's been won because it's been inside me the entire time.
And you know what else? You're the cream of the crop.
We are the cream of the crop.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
Great game. What great questions too. I think we were both neck and neck the entire game, and it was only like 20 points.
The Jade Egg's always been inside you.
that's the moral of the story.
Is it like, that's not a metaphor either. Like it usually is. Like the magic was inside you all along. Right.
It is. That's why I was standing up for half the episode, because I was a little uncomfortable. Let's start with David.
Stuck with it.
Thank you for bringing this game. Great questions. We were neck and neck the whole time. I think it just had that big swing in the swing round and then the final round. But any shout outs before we let you go today?
No, great hanging out with you guys. That's part of the fun of this show. You get to hang out every couple months or so and hopefully have some fun at this trivia. And John was a great player. It was a close game. I'm glad, you know, most of the questions were answered correctly, but can't wait to be back.
And where can people find your live trivia that you're doing?
Oh, yeah,
now?
Pittsburgh Bar Trivia. I'm hosting around Pittsburgh. So if you go on there, you'll see me. I guess I'm going to be the regular host at a place called Strange Roots, which is a little microbrewery, right? Like less than a mile from my house, which is great because
that's
very I can
convenient.
Just go there. But you'll have original content there on Wednesday nights. So come in, say hi. Hopefully somebody listens to the podcast, shows up. Please come up and say hi.
Yeah, and if you say you're a fan of Triviality to David, he'll give you a Pittsburgh Steelers colored Jade Egg. So thank you, David, sure. For joining us. Hopefully we can get out to Pittsburgh. You said you have a theater ready for us.
Anytime.
We'll come make an appearance.
Anytime.
And John, thank you so much. Great meeting you for the first time, having you on the show. We appreciate you also being a Patreon supporter like David. And
very knowledgeable too, John.
Yeah, very, very knowledgeable.
I would have been so lost.
He was what a great player today. Any shout outs before we let you go?
Thanks, David, for hosting. Thank you guys for inviting me on. Had a ton of fun despite getting completely dump trucked in the last round there. But hope you'll be able to come on again sometime. This has been awesome.
And as per usual, our final thank you goes out to Airwave Media. You can find them at airwavemedia.com and check out other great shows such as Pulse of the Planet, Settle the Stars, and Who Did What Now? Neil? Who Did What Now?
What you talking about, Willis?
And that'll be the show for today. And we want to once again thank our guests, David and John. For Matt, who is somewhere, Jeff, Neil, and myself, that is Triviality.